There was a moment of splendor in Baltimore last week as the nation's first cathedral, the Basilica of the Assumption, came back to life after a two-year, $34 million restoration. The basilica has now reclaimed its original neoclassical design by the colonial architect Benjamin Latrobe. Once again, the sun pours in through 24 skylights in the dome, skylights which had been painted over during World War II. More light streams in through the translucent side windows, windows which had once been replaced with stained glass. The walls have been returned to a rich cream color, as Latrobe intended. The floor's white marble shines, pink rosettes flower on the ceiling. The basilica stands at the corner of Cathedral and Mulberry Streets opposite the old Baltimore Harbor. The Peabody Preparatory Children's Chorus sang at opening festivities. Mark Potter is the executive director of the Basilica of the Assumption Historic Trust. He points out that the basilica's cornerstone was laid in 1806.
This church, really in the 19th century, was known as the St. Peter's of North America. Anything of merit within the Catholic Church in terms of the governance and formation happened here. The Catholic school system was founded here. The Catholic University of America was founded here. So for Catholics, this really was the mother church. But for all Americans, this building became a symbol of religious freedom. Here you had this recently oppressed minority group rising out of the shadows and building one of the most beautiful churches in all of North America.
The story of Catholic sanctuary in Maryland begins long before the United States was a country. In 1634, Lord Baltimore and his small band of Catholics left England and sailed into the Potomac River on two small ships, the Ark and the Dove. They were seeking refuge from persecution in England. Maryland is named for Henrietta Maria, the French wife of King Charles I. For a time, Catholics thrived in Maryland. In 1649, that colony's assembly passed the Act of Toleration, but it was overturned 5 years later, and persecution began anew.
Later on in the colonial period, when you had the Glorious Revolution in England, those penal laws that were established against Catholics in England came across the Atlantic, and all the Catholic churches that were established here were burned to the ground, and the Catholic population went underground. In fact, for the rest of the colonial period, it was illegal to practice the Roman Catholic faith. Also, if you were Catholic, you were ineligible to hold elective office or join any of the professions like teachers, doctors, lawyers, and so forth.
That all changed in 1789 with the new U.S. Constitution and its guarantee of religious freedom.
And it was at that point that the Pope could officially start the Catholic Church in the new country, in the United States. And he chose Baltimore to be America's first diocese, and John Carroll is America's first bishop. In fact, if you were Catholic and you lived in the United States in 1789, whether you lived in Massachusetts, Georgia, anywhere east of the Mississippi, John Carroll was your bishop and Baltimore was your diocese.
It wasn't until 1806 that Bishop Carroll felt confident enough to begin the basilica. Hearing that the Catholic Church wanted to build its first cathedral, Benjamin Latrobe approached the bishop. Latrobe was the architect of the nation's capital and a close friend of Thomas Jefferson's. He drew up two plans, one a more traditional English Gothic cathedral, and the second a neoclassical domed design. Carroll chose the latter because he wanted his cathedral to reflect the new American architecture. He wanted to show the rest of America that Catholics were just as American as anyone else. Masonry domes were always an architectural challenge. Making it even harder, the plan called for skylights. Latrobe solved the problem by adding a double dome design, one on top of the other. Again, Mark Potter of the Basilica's Historic Trust.
We are standing beneath the interior dome, and this dome is 6 feet of bricks and mortar. There's not a piece of steel holding this building together. It's all piled up stones, bricks, and mortar, just like an old European cathedral. Now, on that dome, Latrobe placed an outer dome, and that's the dome you see from the street, so to speak, and you can walk in between those spaces. And it's in that dome that Jefferson inspired him to place 24 skylights. And from those skylights, the natural light comes in, and you can see several reflections right here. You can't really see the skylights from down here.
No, you can't.
And that's what makes it very mysterious. And in fact, in the 19th century, they referred to that as the Lumeria Mysteria, the mysterious light. And as they were praying, they would look up, and they would see this beautiful light come in, but they could not see the source of the light.
84-year-old Anna Hart walked in on a light-filled day and marveled at how the restoration had transformed the space. Hart was a choir girl in the Basilica in the late 1930s.
I couldn't believe this when I walked in, you know. I thought, how beautiful this is, you know. And I was reading the parts they would print in the Catholic Review about it. So I was really looking forward to this today. But anyhow, I attended Seton High School. And every Pentecost Sunday, when Archbishop Curley was then, you know, here living, we sang the Pentecost Mass here. And it was like over 1,000 girls. So it was quite impressive. And, of course, I always came here for the agony in the garden on Good Friday. And, of course, it was not as beautiful as it is today.
This week, it was Baltimore's Morgan State University Choir that sang, an all-African-American chorus. High up along the basilica walls are two galleries, one for cloistered nuns, hidden from view by a long curtain, and the other, newly restored at the rear of the basilica, was where slaves and freed African Americans came to worship. Bazell and Carey is a student at Archbishop Curley High School, which has long had an association with the basilica.
When we came here for the tour, remember those used to be, especially over there, that used to be the place where the slaves would sit during Mass. And, you know, being an African-American here, I mean, things have changed over the years, and it's good to see that now that's not a big issue, but it's still historic.
The basilica is now a beacon for everyone, says Mark Potter.
I think this building is more of a national appeal rather than maybe the Archdiocese of Baltimore. I mean, we are a national historic landmark. We are a cathedral. We're a basilica. We're a national shrine. We're a Marian shrine. We're a church, and we're a parish. So it has an appeal that crosses boundaries. And we're very happy that this church has been restored and it's back for all Americans. And as you look around this church today and all of the people touring here and everyone that's so interested, you know, I would imagine that a good portion of the people in here are not Catholic. This building is about American history. It's about Catholic history. I think it's so important in this day and age when you have all these things happening in the world and mosques being burned and temples being burned to the ground, and to see, you know, to experience religious freedom in the United States. And this, of course, is the cradle of that.
To see Benjamin Latrobe's magnificent design for the Baltimore Basilica, go to our website, npr.org. Petra Mayer produced our visit to the Basilica of the Assumption in Baltimore. Special thanks to Sheffield Studios in Maryland for tape of the Morgan State University Choir and the Peabody Preparatory Children's Chorus.